Hello, nerds, and welcome to the Engadget podcast. I hope you guys had a lovely holiday. We are back after taking a week off. I am your host, Terrence O'Brien. Joining me this week, Devendra Hardwar, hello. Dana Woolman.
Yo.
I hope you guys had a lovely holiday.
Yeah, a lovely holiday of buying stuff for ourselves, right?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah. Well, clearly when I say holiday, I mean Black Friday and Cyber Monday, mm-hmm. not Thanksgiving. Not that other day where you're forced to, like, sit across from your family and talk to them. Who cares about those guys?
I love my family.
I like my family, too. I'm just kidding. I actually had a great Thanksgiving. Got to do kind of double dose. Went and spent some time with my wife's family, mm-hmm. then went home and got drunk and played Cards Against Humanity with my family.
That works.
Because that's basically our holiday tradition.
Your family sounds like fun.
Yeah. The best is we don't get to do it for Thanksgiving, but for Christmas, we make my mother play Cards Against Humanity.
Okay, I'm sure she is the filthiest one.
So. It's really great watching her and her, you know, vaguely conservative Catholic ways have to say really atrocious, vulgar things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I can't even say some of the things that have had
no,
to come
out. No, you can't. You probably can't.
It's like my mom on a typical Sunday.
Yeah. The first time I had to hear my mother talk about Pac-Man guzzling semen was one of the highlights of my life, yes. I must
That's
say.
That's when you know you became an adult.
Stop it.
Yeah. You can have that conversation with your mother.
O'Brien.
Yeah. Ah, so good. You guys want to get to it?
Sure.
Why not?
That's a good transition.
It's the best one I've got, unless you want to continue to talk about Pac-Man and semen.
Gobble, gobble, gobble.
Stop it.
That's the technical term for it.
Yes.
Dana, you know that, right? I'm being as polite about it as I can. She's just shaking her head for those that are listening. She's just closing her eyes, shaking her head.
That's a good start.
Let's go on to Flame Wars, same way we start every week. For those who don't know how this works, we're going to talk about some of the biggest topics of the week. You guys each have 20 seconds to make your opening statements. I will allow a brief rebuttal, and then I will declare a winner. Any questions?
No.
No? All right. Let's start with something that kind of stuck in my craw a little bit yesterday. Yelp announced a new feature for their app that allows you to take a Yelfie. This is a... I'm just going to do this.
Yeah.
Just off the bat.
Okay.
No.
The story's done.
No. Yeah. My question to you guys is, Yelfie, is it a terrible word or the worst word?
Yeah.
Dana, let's start with you.
It is the worst. I dislike that phrase even more than Pac-Man guzzling semen. Yes. It's not even a good portmanteau of Yelp and selfie. So grammatically, they messed up, and it's not even good wordplay.
Yeah.
Devendra, is this not actually the worst word?
It's pretty much the worst word. It's pretty much the worst. This is. I feel like we've broken the entire Flame Wars mechanism with this story because, yeah, I don't even. What's the point of taking a selfie with Yelp? Like, just to. Is it a new way of, like, food photography? Like, along with, like, your pretty food shot, it's going to be your face right next to it? I don't know.
I think that might be the first time I've gotten to buzz you, and it felt pretty good. I can't think of any words that are worse than Yelfie.
Yeah.
Did anybody come up with any in the research? Like, just like a brief Google, like, worst words in the English language?
You know, if they wanted people to talk about this feature, we were talking about it.
That's true.
We lose, and they win.
Yeah.
This is how much I dislike it. I would rather read a pun, and the entire Engadget staff knows how I feel about puns, especially puns sneakily published on Engadget. I would rather read a pun than read the word Yelfie ever again.
I think that about settles it.
Yeah.
Devendra, do you have anything to add?
No.
There are no winners on this one. Everybody's a loser, especially the English language.
Except Yelp. Yelp wins, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I guess we can put Yelp down as the winner. They will get a point on our Flame Wars leaderboard.
Let's not do that.
What about the people who actually take Yelfies?
They're the biggest losers of all.
What if you are the guy in the Yelfie stock photo that's going to be reused over and over again?
That guy's life is over.
Yeah.
Oh, he's probably going to get paid a lot for it, though.
I mean, that's true.
That's a thing. You want your stock photo to get used a lot.
So. I definitely would not be telling people that I was the Yelfie stock photo guy at parties, though.
The Yelfie poster boy.
Yeah. you don't want to be like the poster child of like VR or something, because there are a lot of, there's some tech journalists who are like, they ended up, their faces are just always gawking with VR headsets.
Yeah. There's a lot of things you don't want to be the poster child for. AirPods is another.
Yeah.
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 God. Technology world is terrible.
Yeah.
And on to another terrible thing.
So let's move on to our next topic.
Speaking of things you may or may not want to be photographed wearing.
things that you don't want to be the poster boy for. Nike, I forget the name of them now even.
Hyper Adapt.
Nike's new self-lacing sneakers. These are their quote-unquote consumer version, I guess, of the mags.
Because the other ones were too high-tech for us to really... they were too much for us to handle.
Well, the mags, which were the direct copy of the ones from Back to the Future 2, I don't even know how much they sold for, but there was only like, there was less than 100 of those made. These are going to be slightly more available, though not at first. The problem is that their quote unquote consumer version of their self-lacing shoe costs $720.
Cool. All right. This is the future we want.
Yep. So the question to you guys is, you know, are self-lacing sneakers actually worth a premium? Any premium at all, even if it's like a $70 premium, not a $700 one? Mm-hmm. Or is it just an overpriced gimmick for lazy people? Dana, you have the unenviable task of defending self-lacing shoes.
You know what? It's fine. Let the market decide. If people don't want to pay for these sneakers at that price or any premium, then Nike won't make them anymore or will cut the price. But, you know, it's not like Nike was going to use its resources to save the world anyway. So Nike was not going to cure cancer. So I can't bring myself to get upset about the price or the concept of these shoes.
Fair enough. Devendra?
It's the dumbest thing in the world. I can tie my own shoes. Done.
End of argument. I've got to say, Dana, that is pretty convincing.
Like, it's not like a drug company where you're like, are they using their resources to cure cancer or give monkeys erections?
Nike does have like a philanthropic arm.
But Nike was going to use its R&D to sell you shoes or sell you shoes.
This is true.
Yep.
Yeah.
This is true. I wish the innovate, like I actually like shoe innovation. The Converse All-Star 2s, which I'm wearing right now, also Nike Division.
Yep.
That's good technology. I can walk around these all day.
They're dope.
I feel great.
Yep.
This is the dumbest thing. And I don't even care about the price because I'm sure people will pay it, but it's just dumb. Like, self-lacing isn't a thing we need.
And people drive themselves crazy and pay so much money for shoes, low-tech shoes, anyway.
Yeah. It's just for the style.
And I mean, you know, when the Yeezys, let's say, are pretty. But I don't really get all of the effort that people put into.
I don't. I mean, right by our office, there are so many shoe stores. You walk by certain times of the day, you'll see people lined up around the block.
Oh, yeah.
Just for shoes.
Edgar on staff, our senior editor, Edgar Alvarez, is a big shoe guy. So is Richard Lawler.
Yeah, we've got a couple of sneakerheads on staff.
And we should have one of them on one time just to, like...
Just to try and explain it to
us. Pick their brain, ask why.
Well, I mean... I don't know. I should ask them, but was there like a Yeezy release last week? Because I walked, I was actually over in the neighborhood by the office last Friday, and I walked past a sneaker store. It was, I don't know, I want to say 11:30 p.m. on a Friday night, and people were lined up down the block, clearly settling in for the night, getting ready for the store to open on Saturday morning. And it was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
I mean, maybe it was a Black Friday related sale.
Maybe.
Or something. Yeah.
But why would you do that on a Saturday
morning? I don't know. I ask a lot of questions about the sneaker people. Like, I actually like shoe footwear in general. It's just the specific sneaker style and the fetishization of this type of sneaker is really strange.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I admittedly don't get the fetishization of a lot of things. And like, I'm a guy who cares about clothes and cares about like that sort of thing. But yeah,
I'd rather spend that money on like a good pair of leather shoes or something.
Yeah.
Like something nice. Yeah.
Like I love my Allen Edmonds.
There you go.
Love those till the day I die, but I'm never going to like line up outside of a store and stay overnight
waiting to get a price. I guess. Like,
I mean, if it was like they had like the Daltons, which are the really nice like dress boots on sale for like $100.
We're going to deep cuts.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just saying there's some really, really nice shoes. I think we've talked enough about sneakers, and I'm sorry, Dana, Devendra wins.
Hey! My my argument was the best.
There is open bias.
I mean, look,
you are the worst.
I'll say this. You make a valid point that Nike's going to sell you sneakers. That's just what they do. Mm-hmm. And eventually the market will decide. But at the same time, I literally don't understand the purpose of self-lacing shoes.
We saw it in Back to the Future 2, and that looked cool.
I don't understand the purpose of your face.
I don't either, so we're in the same boat there. You win for that one. You get a point for that, because Devendra's not going to convince me otherwise.
Been treated very unfairly. Sad.
Let's move on to our last story to debate, and that is Netflix and their because I did not sleep enough or have enough coffee. Netflix decided to launch their offline viewing feature kind of...
Randomly,
just yesterday morning. Mm-hmm. I guess technically it'll be 2 days ago by the time this goes up. We record Thursday morning, for those that don't know. And this goes up Friday morning. They just kind of like randomly announced it Thursday morning, and now you can... Or Wednesday morning, now you can download episodes of TV shows and movies to your phone or tablet to watch from Netflix. So a question, and Devendra, I'm going to let you take the pro here because you basically wrote this piece already yesterday. So is this something that Netflix needed to do, or is this just one more like distraction that's going to keep people glued to their phones unnecessarily?
Well, yeah, I won't deny that it's another major distraction, but yeah, they needed to do this. Users have been demanding it for a while. There are tons of people who commute and who don't always have access to internet. International expansion is going to be a big one, and yeah, Netflix needs to compete with Amazon. So yeah, they need it for all those reasons, and I wrote about that. Go read that.
We will put a link to that in the description. Dana, your rebuttal?
I don't actually disagree with anything Devendra said, but I mean, as a Netflix user myself, it didn't occur to me that I needed offline viewing. And I think the one time I would be on an airplane when, it would suck to put my show on hold, but at least I can stream from whatever airline's catalog. It won't be as big as Netflix's, but it will be enough for however many hours I'm on the plane.
Mm-hmm. So that was the one use case where it kind of like stood out to me. I was like, okay, I can download a movie and watch it on the plane. That's pretty nice because I'm not paying to watch movies on a plane. If you should be entertaining me for free if I'm
paying. This is
true. Paying.
Although more and more airlines are having good in-flight service too. So
yeah.
Like I think Delta or JetBlue, one of them like made all their content free.
And if you had to put stupid Gilmore Girls on hold for a couple hours while you were en route, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Wouldn't it, though?
We were having a very rigorous Gilmore Girls discussion before
we started
recording.
I've never actually seen an episode, so I'm really
I
just
think
saying.
You really like it, Dana.
You are a lucky person.
Gilmore Girls is the best. Terrence is wrong. The thing is, like, Netflix, I guess, completely changed our world in terms of how we anticipated content. Like, we just need it now. We need it immediately. And we're going to, over 30% of America's primetime internet usage is Netflix, and probably even more by this point, because that stat's a year old. So Netflix has taken over our lives, and now they'll just fill in every other gap. Any bit of free time, you could be Netflixing.
I mean, I guess. Here's my thing is, I think you're right. They had to do this. You're going to get the point. Sorry, Dana. but it's hard not to be, like, a little bit disturbed by it. Like, taking the train to work, just so many people, like, sitting there, like, watching TV shows on the train or playing games on the train or on the boat too. And it's just like, God, can you, like, do something more valuable with your time? Like,
I mean,
read something.
Read something.
There's newspapers.
Reading is overrated, Terrence. And also, people could be reading things on their phones.
That's fine. Yeah. And, I mean, I do see people reading on their phones, and I give them all the credit in the world for doing that. But most of the time, it's, like, really mindless games and, like...
I don't really care what people do on their phones. And I mean, so actually, like, outside of this intellectual exercise, I agree with Devendra. I think they needed to catch up to Amazon. And also, if Netflix is going to keep hiking its subscriber fees, it's going to have to, I think, back it up with useful features. And this is one that's useful. And apparently other, maybe not me personally, but other people were demanding. So that's good.
It's just in 2 years, Netflix turned around from being like, no, we'll never do offline content. And
I don't really understand why they said no.
I think the licensing deals. Like, Netflix...
It's probably, you know, part of it.
Yeah, they don't... Like, they make a lot of money, but they spend most of their money on licensing deals. But now that, you know, fast forward 2 years, they have more original content. They have stuff that they've actually built or made themselves. They don't have to deal with licensing fees. So they can just put that out there. I was surprised that there was a lot of other content, too. Like, there are a lot of movies and, like, all the DC TV shows are available offline.
Does offline apply to everything or just a smaller
just
subset?
Just small things right now. Okay. But it is a bunch of things that you'll want to binge. Like, a lot of the DC shows. So The Flash, Arrow, and things like that.
I think that's fair.
And all of their original content.
And all the original content, obviously. For sure. And even some movies, like Moonrise Kingdom was there. And, you know, yeah, your phone or your tablet is not the best way to watch that beautiful movie, but
yeah.
It's nice, I mean, if you just want to take it somewhere.
Your phone is definitely not the best way to watch that.
Until your phone pops into a VR headset.
Yeah, and, you know, just one last thing before we move on. If you have issues with your phone battery now, just wait until start watching Netflix on it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's gonna be the worst. Yeah. Just the worst. But Netflix and their offline viewing is the perfect transition to the worst. A segment where we occasionally rant about the things that are driving us nuts during the course of the week. So this is not going to be a conversation for those who have never seen this before. This is literally just going to be several minutes of us complaining.
That's which fun. That sounds like fun listening.
Yeah, we're all very good at complaining, to be clear. Experts.
We're New Yorkers.
So yesterday, while Devendra was working on this follow-up piece about Netflix and offline viewing, I discovered that Amazon has offline viewing. I did not know this was
a thing. Which mainly involved me saying, hey, Amazon has been doing this for years. And Terrence was like, what?
Yeah, basically. And I was not alone on staff. I was one of many editors who was unaware that Amazon Prime Video has an offline viewing option.
Consumers are unaware.
Yeah. This is primarily because they do a terrible job at marketing it.
Yeah.
And we're also basic.
Yeah, I mean that too. But I think that part of the big issue here is not only has Amazon done a terrible job of advertising this feature and really promoting the usefulness of Amazon Prime and their video features, but Amazon's insistence on trying to create like an ecosystem and thinking that they're fucking Apple
on Android
is out of, like, it's an insane thing. So if you want to take advantage of Amazon Prime Video's offline viewing capabilities, you first have to go get the Amazon app from the Google Play Store. That's probably going to be your point of entry because nobody's going directly to the Amazon site first. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is if you go to try and watch a video in the Amazon app from the Google Play Store, it tells you instead that you have to go to the Amazon website.
So step two.
Step two, to go download their other Amazon app that isn't in the Play Store.
It's an app. It's an app store.
Yeah. So it's
App Store.
Amazon Underground.
Okay.
Which is not just an app store, but basically a replacement for Amazon Shopping as well. Right, it's all the same features, except it's called Amazon Underground. And then you go to this web page, and it tells you to install it, which means you then have to go into your settings and tick off the thing that tells you that prevents you from installing software from unknown sources. So then you download that app, you install it, you open it, you go to play an Amazon Prime Video, and then it tells you you have to go download the Amazon Prime Video app. Which is also not in the Google Play Store and is instead like a separate thing.
You can only get the Prime Video app in Amazon Underground.
Which you wouldn't know exists unless you it's
usability.
It's not a nightmare. And I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is something preventing them from putting the Amazon Prime Video app in the Google Play Store, I'm pretty sure there's not because there's a million other video streaming apps that you have to pay for or buy things through. So I'm pretty sure it's not like a purchasing issue. It's not like a financial thing that Google's like, no, you can't do that. And also because of this, you can't have Chromecast accessibility in the Prime thing. So unless you have an Amazon Fire TV, which who is like, why? Why do you need that at this point? You can't watch it on your TV. So dumb.
Why do you need it as the managing editor of a site that has recommended these products?
I would recommend a Chromecast over a Fire TV. I think the Fire TV is a mediocre product at best. It doesn't offer very many advantages over a Roku or a Chromecast.
Yeah,
and
but you know what you can do with the Fire TV? Amazon.
Yeah, but I don't care enough. It's I was so annoyed by this yesterday that I seriously considered canceling my Prime subscription.
Wow. That's a little hardcore. It's more like these companies, it's these big tech companies, and they're all like having their little inner wars with each other. So at least the bad usability, right?
Yeah.
On iOS, you can download the Amazon Prime Video app and just download video. So that's pretty straightforward. But if you want to like get a Kindle book or a Comixology book or something on iOS, you have to like, you can't do it from within their apps. Their apps are only viewers. So you have to go like to the web or to another web browser somewhere and do your purchase there and then go back into the app because.
Right. That's how I've gotten all my Kindle books on too.
Because Amazon doesn't want to deal with Apple's like payment mechanism and everything.
But that's not a barrier on Android, I don't believe, right? That's not.
It's not a barrier, but they created their own barrier on Android when they didn't need to. I don't know why they did that. So basically, Amazon stinks at usability. Hopefully. The thing that's really cool about Netflix is offline is that it's so easy. It's there. You hit a button and it's in your queue and done.
Yeah.
That's it. And maybe Amazon will wise up and fix their stuff now because of that.
Yeah. So too long didn't read. Amazon is the worst.
It's a shame. They have a lot of good shows. So. Yeah. Well.
Dana, what's bothering you this week?
I've had a good week. You know, having a good week at work, I'm on top of my to-do list. I got a lot of good Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals. I've been getting a lot of sleep, so I'm in a good mood. The one thing I'll say is that I'm testing a bunch of laptops. People may have read my recent MacBook Pro and Surface Book reviews, and now I'm on to the HP Spectre X360, the updated one, which I have right in front of me, and the not pictured here, the Lenovo 910. Similar machines, they're both about the same size, they're both convertibles, they're okay. I mean, so the thing about this that gets on my nerves, and Lenovo to another extent too, is all of these bad Windows touchpads, or at least all of the ones that don't use Microsoft's touchpad. What just gets me is that they're so bad, most of them. There's one really clear superior option, which is Microsoft's Precision touchpads, and no one else is using them. And so they just keep going back, in this case, to Synaptics, which has had so many years to prove itself to consumers that it can make a decent touchpad, and it can't. This one has been just driving me nuts. The cursor either doesn't go where I want it to or it does things I don't want it to. Mm-hmm. And it has sort of dampened my experience with this otherwise pretty good machine. I mean, it's very lightweight. It's fast.
It's very pretty. Yeah.
It's pretty. It boots up quickly. Windows Hello is awesome. The keyboard is mostly good, although HP, because of we're moving toward more compact machines, all these companies have to retool their keyboards. So in this case, both the control and the function keys are kind of tiny, which means I periodically mess up my keyboard shortcuts, which I use a lot of. And also the down arrow is especially tiny.
That is minuscule.
Yeah.
By the way, I had to lean over and look, and that's.
I'm
like
really a
horrendous.
Touchpad kind of person. I mean, a keyboard kind of person. Yeah. I highlight text a lot using arrows instead of the touchpad.
Because the touchpad is garbage.
Because the touchpad is garbage. So at least give me control function and arrow keys that are easy for me to find by feel.
Yeah.
So who else is using the Microsoft touchpad, though?
It's just Microsoft.
It's it. Yeah. Are they licensing?
I think they've licensed it to other computer makers before. I could have sworn Dell has used it before, but I could
maybe
be wrong.
Maybe that would be nice. But the problem, what this proves is that if you want a good touchpad, you have to make it yourself. Like, that's what Apple's secret has always been. And
I don't want people listening to think, oh, that I only like Apple touchpads. Mm-hmm. Actually, I really like the Surface Books, and I think Microsoft does a good job. I just wish more people would use their more companies would use their solution. Yeah,
or Synaptics would be better. Like, I've met with them just to talk about what they were doing, and I asked them like, why is Apple better than you? Like, I straight up asked them, and they're like, well, they have all these integrated components, and they can like deal with lag time and yada yada yada. They can come.
That's a space.
Like,
I mean, we've been talking today about Amazon and Netflix sort of pushing each other forward. Touchpads is a space where I think, especially for Windows laptops, where we need more competition.
Yeah.
Synaptics is just the big name there. I don't think they're doing good work. I think they are dragging down otherwise good products. We need more there.
So what you're saying is the market isn't working in this case. Because we do have competition. You've just said that both Apple and Microsoft make vastly superior products.
Well, Microsoft has been doing it.
I don't expect people to switch to Apple just because you
would think that the quality of the touchpad on the MacBook would drive Windows machine makers to make better touchpads.
It drove Synaptics to be better and do bigger touchpads and glass panels and everything, but they don't feel better. Like, it's on the surface better, but they don't work as well as the Mac or the Microsoft touchpads. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is Synaptics is the worst.
We're going to get a lot of letters from Synaptics.
Yeah. Everybody is going to find themselves on this list at some point, just to be clear.
But, you know, who's other than Synaptics themselves, who's going to disagree with me on that?
Yeah.
I bet Synaptics has made a lot of enemies.
Most likely.
I also wonder if people even notice. Like, we complain about this stuff, but I'm like, when I reviewed the ZenBook 3, also terrible touchpad, I think, also Synaptics. But just doesn't work. And then other people will buy it, like regular consumers. And they'll be like, it's fine. Like, they're okay dealing with
it. But they would say that. They're like...
Yeah,
if they haven't experienced anything better, though,
but if you've spent the money, you are inclined to say this is fine.
This is true. Yeah,
I'll add one more thing before we move on real quick, which is that Windows machines have had such a historically bad problem with touchpads that they are almost single-handed one of the major reasons I continue to buy ThinkPads
because I want the
little red nub.
The nub and also Lenovo, I keep saying IBM, but even back then, they had like this great metal, like almost like a metal material on the touchpad, and that was always smooth and nice.
Yeah.
And that's still good.
Yeah, but that red nub, that was what saved me from having to use shitty touchpads.
Yeah, yeah.
Devendra, what's kind of bothering you this week?
I mean, I spent a big chunk of this week testing and thinking about DirecTV Now, which is their new TV streaming service, AT&T's new streaming service because they bought DirecTV. It's okay. It's actually not terrible. It's just like I don't care that much about it. It's not that new or original. The big thing AT&T was pushing with this thing was like, oh, man, we got all these partnership deals, all these network deals to get the channels on the service, but actually using it, the quality is fine. It's just okay. There's nothing special about it. And I think they're just going to try to push this thing forward through sheer force of marketing muscle alone, which is kind of annoying.
What does it cost? Yeah.
Right now, it's starting at $35 for around 60-plus channels, I think. But there's a special deal, so for that price, you can lock in 100 channels, and supposedly you'll be grandfathered into that price moving forward. But that plan normally costs
$60. And so when a carrier promises grandfathering, we always believe
when
them, right?
When AT&T promises grandfathering, I don't know about that.
Yeah, sure. That's going to last.
Exactly. but yeah, that was like the big price that AT&T executives were touting last month at a conference. And to hear that it's just promotional sounds it's kind of disheartening and kind of sad.
So the service itself isn't the worst.
It's okay.
AT&T and DirecTV are the worst because of the way it's structured.
Yeah, and I guess what's also funny is I've seen commenters saying, oh, man, Verizon owns us, so we have to rail against AT&T. I also don't care about that because we haven't talked much about Verizon's products.
They don't have a competitor.
They don't have
product.
A competitor. What's really funny is AT&T is like, this is an exciting TV service, guys, because you won't need contracts and you also won't need credit checks, like all the things preventing them from getting new subscribers. So this is an easy way for DirecTV /AT&T to get more new TV subscribers. But that's really just it. And it's fine, but I kind of like Sling TV more. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You didn't sound nearly as frustrated as we did about.
It's
our
not
respective
super frustrating. Thing. We just need a place to mention the story. But yeah, so, it's okay.
So yours is less the worst and more the meh.
The meh. Well, the meh that I've spent hours and hours of my life at. I don't like going to big launch events for things that are just dumb and boring, and then having to deal with like loud. You know, a loud DJ set and everything while I'm trying to get
the story
written.
I saw
that
they had a DJ there. Like, they really went all out, right?
Yeah. It was also an evening launch event. I think companies should know that.
That's the worst.
Yeah. That's the worst.
Don't have evening launch events. Yes. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
That ruins people's days. That's us working.
Yeah.
Like, we have families and video games to go home to. We don't want to come and write about your goddamn phone.
Yeah. / IPTV service.
Yeah, like, I was just picking a rant. Yeah. Like, I've done late-night events for phones and stuff.
If you read a less-than-glowing write-up from us at 9 p.m. at night, it might be that it's a bad product. It might also be that we're a bit hangry.
Yeah.
A bit hangry, a bit tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, what is wrong with you?
What, to be better. Yeah.
Any other last thoughts? Any other complaints to lodge this week before we move on?
I'm good.
You good?
I think I'm okay.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's move on and talk about our next subject in group chat. This is where we kind of dissect like the biggest story of the week, the one that's not just a gadget, but something that's really impacting our lives in often unfortunate ways. And so, again, we're recording this on a Thursday morning. It is December 1st, and officially today, changes go into effect to Rule 41, which is governing, it's a rule governing how warrants and searches and seizures are executed. It's a complicated issue. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do our best to kind of try and break it down in an easy to digest way and what these changes mean. So under the way the rules functioned previously, basically, you had to go to a judge in the district where the crime was committed or whatever, mm-hmm. and to get the warrants and stuff. The problem is that in our modern technologically connected world, the perpetrators of crimes, the victims of crimes, aren't necessarily in the same place. Mm-hmm. And sometimes electronic crimes, hacks, and stuff like that bounce around between multiple jurisdictions because of things like where servers are hosted, where the criminal is placed, and where they might have multiple victims, sometimes hundreds of victims, who are scattered all over the country. And so this kind of poses problems for collecting evidence. And so these changes are going to affect an attempt to kind of address those. Does one of you guys kind of want to break down what the changes are, or do you want me to kind of keep going?
I think you should keep going, Terrence. I have a sense of this news, but I have unfortunately been buried with a lot of things.
I mean, essentially, no warrant required for the FBI to hack into a person's computer.
That's partially true. I think that's probably a little bit of an oversimplification. So there are – what it basically does is it lowers the barrier for entry for a lot of warrants in most ways. Basically, it says that a judge can issue a warrant for search and seizure of data and stuff regardless of jurisdiction.
Okay.
It has to meet a certain number of requirements. I have to double check exactly what those are. I think it's like one of them is if it impacts like five different districts, then you can do it no matter where it is. And then there's rules about whether or not the computer's been using privacy protection tools to mask their identity, mm-hmm. or if there is evidence that the machine in question has been compromised otherwise. Again,
and then we're left with a pretty wide net still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's it's less an issue of not needing a warrant, but it's an issue of the barrier for entry for those warrants being greatly, greatly lowered.
They could be like stamped at this point.
Yeah.
Like just stamp them out to get there. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess mm-hmm. let's start with the most basic part, which is it's pretty clear that the existing rules don't work. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, we live in a world where cyber crimes, and I hate the word cyber so much, but whatever.
as long as you're not saying the cyber.
Yeah. It's unfortunately the agreed upon way of describing these things at this point. These things are increasing. We have seen so many hacks this year of tons of different people, of tons of different businesses. We even found, we had that the revelation of the massive Yahoo hack that happened 2 years ago. Basically, like, these things are becoming increasingly difficult to prosecute because mm-hmm. our law system is structured so that, they're focused on localities as opposed to a much larger national scale. I think the problem is, do these rules changes address those problems, one?
Right. I mean, it seems like they're just relaxing the rules so that it's easier for, law enforcement to do what they need to do. But mostly it shows like there's a need for, I don't know, some sort of like cyber law or something, like some sort of like division where we're actually thinking more about crimes and what they mean in like a world where there is no physical locations,
Well, I guess that brings up an interesting one of the interesting points of this, which is the changes to the rules are not a law per se. You know, this is not a change that came about because Congress presented a bill and voted on it. This was basically like a court said, sure, you can have this expanded power.
The precedent changed, right?
Yeah. And the Department of Justice was like,
yeah,
super excited. They were like, yeah, hacking. And Congress failed to act.
Okay.
Dana, you did you see this news yesterday, the last-ditch effort to kind of block it?
I did. It was an effort on the part of a bipartisan group of senators. There were a couple Democrats in there, I think at least one Republican. And it didn't even seem that they were arguing with the potential benefits of this law. I don't think anyone is arguing with the necessity to locate the center of a botnet mm-hmm. attack mm-hmm. necessarily. But they're worried about things like abuses, potentials for abuse, and seem to be looking for more safeguards mm-hmm. against that. So it's hard to argue with that, and it's also hard to argue at least with the intention, the stated intentions of the law, even if the law itself seems to cast a wide or maybe even too wide of a net.
Yeah. I mean, it shows the need for just more technically oriented politicians in general, like people who can kind of foresee the potential issues rather than the people who are just like, oh, yeah, we need this fixed, so let's fix it by doing this thing, you know, hammering away at the problem instead of, like, finessing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's been, I think, an issue we've discussed several times, and I don't think is much of a secret to most of the American population, which is that our politicians are not the most tech-savvy people. But do you find that in particular it seems like the law enforcement arm of the government seems particularly not up on these things and not as in touch with the the changing technological scene as other people?
I mean,
By law enforcement, you mean, let's say, the Department of Justice?
Yes.
Is it that they're not up on it or that it's not in their interest to take a more transparent, cautious approach on this? Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's partially true. I think, you know, when you're talking law enforcement, they want the powers they want.
Yeah.
And so there is a certain amount of, you know, it's in their interest for whether it's the FBI or the Department of Justice to expand these powers. But there seems to be an inordinate level of tone deafness when it comes to these things. And I think this is one of these issues. I think that's part of one of the things that the senators brought up, which is that, you know, there aren't enough safeguards. And that seems to be sort of the stumbling block for me, at least, which when I see the DOJ and the FBI stuff talking about this, they seem to have this idea that these things can't be abused. We're the good guys.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe that's a facetious thing. Maybe I'm giving them more credit than they're due, and they're like, no, we know exactly what we're doing. We just don't care.
Yeah. I mean, look at what we know the NSA did, what we know a lot of other government agencies did and would do if they had more powers. Like, it also seems like I'm sure there's like a generational gap in those institutions too, where maybe the older folks who have been doing this for a while, even if they're technically savvy, have a very different view of how things should work versus, you know, the younger agents or something.
So let's talk about the two big changes that are really kind of raises some hackles amongst privacy advocates and stuff, especially the Electronic Frontier Foundation. So there's a couple of different changes that are happening in Rule 41, but the two big ones are this. So one would grant I'm going to just read straight from the EFF's thing. You know, take issue with that if you want, because they clearly have their bias, but it's one of the cleaner descriptions of the rule changes I found. So basically the first part is it grants the authority to practically any judge to issue a search warrant remotely access, seize, or copy data relevant to a crime when a computer is using privacy protective tools to safeguard its location. So the like short version of this is, are you on a VPN? Do you use Tor? Are you changing the country location for your Twitter profile in order to read tweets from someplace else, you are then potentially able to be targeted by these search warrants based purely on that.
Okay.
And then the other one is it grants the authorization. It would grant authorization to a judge to issue a search warrant for hacking, seizing, or otherwise infiltrating computers that may be part of a botnet.
In other words, if you're the victim of botnet, you might still be hacked.
Exactly. So the concept here being that if they decide that your machine is part of a botnet, part of the way to discovering the source of said botnet might be through accessing your computer as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a whole lot of... let's start with just that before we even get to the bigger picture problems.
Because that's millions and millions of people.
That's not just millions and millions of people, but that's granting access to people who are already a victim of a crime and granting search and seizure access to them, which just strikes me as insanely problematic, like on a really basic level. I mean, Dana, if I ran a botnet and infected your machine and then the government decided that because you were the victim of it, they were going to break into your machine and discovered other incriminating evidence of something unrelated, that's clearly problematic, right?
Oh, absolutely.
There are safeguards for that, I believe, but I think we've seen in the past that that's the sort of power that routinely ends up being abused. And then the other issue with this, and this is one that I actually hadn't even thought of until I was doing some more research this morning, which is basically that, you know, a lot of these hackers and a lot of these criminal groups, and whether they're state-sponsored or otherwise, aren't dumb.
Yeah.
They're very crafty. They create very complex and sophisticated pieces of malware that can do all sorts of terrible things to your machine. What is stopping somebody from creating a botnet that more or less does just enough to get the attention of the federal government and then sits quietly and waits for the FBI to access a computer that is part of this botnet and then basically use that as a stepping stone to the broader government network?
You just described a Mr. Robot plotline, probably.
Potentially, but that sounds that is 100% technically feasible, right?
Totally.
If I'm wrong out there, if we have some cybersecurity experts out there, please correct me. But from what little research I did have the ability to do today, that seems perfectly feasible.
And even more like conspiratorial, I guess, like there is the possibility for like a government agent too, who's like, I really like want to see the computers of this particular person. They could easily create their own sort of hacking tool as well that would make it appear that they had a botnet on their machine, and that could get them legitimate reasons to get in there too. So like there are all sorts of ways this could be worked around that wouldn't necessarily be legal, but that also hasn't stopped some government arms.
And I think it's important we're talking about all this, and that we plan to write more about it on the site, especially because I think as important as this is, it's not going to get much airtime publicly. I think there are so many other things that probably seem more pressing to people.
Like tweets about Hamilton audiences being mean.
We're transitioning to a new administration. So there's so many other things I think people will be reading about and talking about. And it's a real shame that this is not getting more public exposure now. And it wasn't during the campaign. The one person who I think really had articulate, expansive views on this sort of thing was Rand Paul. But he obviously exited the race pretty early on. So I think it's just a shame in general that there isn't more of a discussion right now about this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But that is why, in case you're wondering, why we should be discussing it on the podcast and on Engadget.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is how technology impacts us.
If we don't talk about it, who else is going to be talking about it?
I've seen people, I think some readers were annoyed that we were talking about Trump in the angle of net neutrality, but that's our bread and butter. And also, everyone is talking about his stupid tweets and like all the other stuff. Like, yeah. There are other things we should focus on. Like, I'm really worried, like, what a Trump administration would do with expanded hacking powers like this.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, like, if somebody, like, made a bot that infected, like, a bunch of widespread amount of Twitter users, who knows what he could do against people who've said bad things about him.
Yeah. And to be clear, we're not worried because of Trump. Yeah. This is a troubling thing in general.
Yes.
Every president has basically made it their goal to expand executive power. Mm-hmm. When your guy is in charge, you feel okay about that because Congress might be standing in their way. But the end result is that eventually your guy is not in power, and you're really going to regret those expanded executive powers. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of people on the left who have kind of been a little bit quiet about some of the things that Obama has done, suddenly going like, oh, shit, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't get to be president forever. So, yeah. And I mean, and this is one of these things. People were so upset, especially on the right and on the far left, about the NSA spying stuff, about the bulk metadata collection things. But I think a lot of people center left and, you know, myself included, were kind of like, it's bad, but like, it's not that bad, right? Mm-hmm. And then news kept coming out. And we're like, oh no, this is actually really, really bad. Like, this is real bad. And none of that has changed. Mm-hmm. And now we're all shitting ourselves, basically. to be real blunt about it. Like, I mean, this is troubling for mm-hmm. a lot of reasons. I don't know. Anything else to add there?
I think just to our point about discussion and discourse and readers, let's keep the discussion going. So if you disagree mm-hmm. with what we've said today about Rule 41 and its possible implications, you should email us.
Yeah.
One of the best emails we got recently was from a guy named Jeremy about 2 weeks ago. And
yes, I wanted to call him out on the show.
Yeah, his name's Jeremy, and he wrote us articulate, constructive, polite email disagreeing with us about net neutrality. And it was one of my favorite emails I've gotten recently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So more of that, please. Mm-hmm. If you disagree with us, keep the conversation going.
Yeah, and as long as you're civil. That's the key thing is,
yes,
we understand that we have our biases. We're pretty upfront about that. You know, I've never made any bones about my political opinions. I don't think anybody else here has.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to be fair about it. But that doesn't mean we're going to say things we disagree with for the sake of argument necessarily, but it means we're going to be transparent about our views. But if you disagree, we are 100% happy to engage you. I'd like to actually start reading letters from readers and stuff out there on the air. Like,
yeah.
I'd like to get some constructive criticism, some feedback. If you have thoughts about Rule 41, please send them in. Email us. It's podcast@Engadget, not podcasts, podcast. Oops, just bang the microphone. Singular.
If
you have a good point, if there's a question around that you want answered that we didn't address here, I apologize that we are not more steeped in this issue because I think, as Dana was saying, it didn't get the attention it deserved. It's the sort of thing that kind of snuck up on us.
And there are
no
easy answers, even if we do a lot of reading.
Yeah.
It's hard, like today, it was hard for me to fully come out against Rule 41 because I don't like botnets and you don't like botnets.
No.
But we like privacy. Mm-hmm. And there is no simple answer to that.
It's hard to balance those things. Devendra, any other last thoughts?
No, I'm good. I think it's definitely worth us paying attention to it. It also seems, I think, funny how we're sort of like just like filing the breadcrumbs of like what could lead to potentially big issues down the line with the Trump presidency, just in terms of net neutrality and this thing, and who knows what else could happen. Like, it seems like you're seeing the recipes being or the ingredients being put together that could lead to all sorts of problems down the line. So that's why we're talking about it.
Yeah,
because it could be a big deal going down.
All right. Where can the people send their hateful tweets?
You don't need any more hateful tweets.
I mean, I welcome them. That's fine. I don't know if you guys saw this, but I was in a Twitter war with the creator of Minecraft, so that was fun.
Oh,
he's
I missed
like
this.
3 million followers. So that was
the two of you both have a habit of picking Twitter fights just because you're bored.
To be clear,
or angry.
It's mostly because I'm angry. It's not because I'm bored.
Yeah.
I may have gotten into it with Florian Mueller.
Oh, yeah.
Among others.
Yeah, I've also gotten into it with Glenn Greenwald.
You see, I don't fight unless you start with me on Twitter.
Well, there you go.
I have a serious issue with people who are public figures who have significant followings spreading obviously misleading or obviously false information.
Mm-hmm. And people don't like it when you point that out.
Yeah.
So,
I'll leave it at that. There's no need to resurrect this stuff, but yeah.
So I'm at Devendra on Twitter.
Don't mess with him.
Follow me for more Twitter battles.
Dana, where can the fine people find you?
Dana Wallman, one word, no space. Please don't start a fight with me.
I am at Terrence O'Brien, lots of E's, no A's. You can start a fight with me. I will probably respond the first time and then just ignore you.
The mute button is fantastic. So
I actually don't even do that.
Do it.
It's just not worth it. I go, okay, this is pointless. But seriously, we do want to continue this conversation. So if you can be civil and want to have like a legitimate discussion, hit us up on Twitter. Email us, as I said, podcast at Engadget. You can also just hit up the podcast. It's at Engadget Podcast on Twitter. So send us your comments, your questions, all of that stuff. Let's have a conversation because that's the only way forward. And before we go, we're not going to do a comment of the week this week. Every episode recently, even this one, has been ending on kind of a downer. So I wanted to share with you a story that's a little bit more uplifting, a little bit happier about the power of the internet. So a friend of mine who will remain nameless, just because we didn't get a chance to clear it with everybody involved that they would be okay with being mentioned on the air. He was the photographer at my wedding. Super nice guy. Awesome dude. Posted on Facebook, I want to say, probably about 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday. And this was, by the way, the first time I'd found out this information, that he was looking for his biological parents, saying that, you know, he was thankful for his adopted parents, who were lovely, but that he had decided that it was time for him to find out where he really came from. And he had very little information to go on. All he had was his birthday, the city he was born in, and a rough time of day.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
That was literally it. He was like, roughly 8:45 p.m. on this date in Cold Spring. Mm-hmm. Didn't know the hospital. Had no idea of any other information. He was just like, I'm looking for help to find my biological parents. 3.5 hours later, he was on the phone with his mom.
Huh.
And he's like making a connection there. He's already found so much stuff that they have in common that like...
Mm-hmm.
Were they happy to hear from him?
She was reportedly. I don't know if he's found his biological father necessarily. Mm-hmm. I only have confirmation that he spoke to his mother on the phone. Again, this is like, it's a personal thing. I don't want to pry too much. Yeah. I wasn't going to be like, you said your biological mom, like what
That's
else?
That's pretty cool.
But he,
do you have a sense of like how it kind of led to that? Or
I don't really. I'd have to really dig through.
Okay.
All the comments, but I mean, it's just like, it's, there are good people out there.
Yeah.
The power of the internet is actually a good thing. It's one of these reminders that it's there to connect us, not just like pry us apart into little tribes that scream at each other. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to share that. Like, that's a happy story.
Good.
An uplifting thing.
Yeah. That's a thing.
So good on you, Facebook. Awesome, and congratulations to my friend who will remain nameless. We will be back next week, I believe, right?
Sure.
Yes. We will be back next
week. In some combination of people.
Yes.
Yeah. So until then, thank you for watching. And that's all I've got.